Good afternoon, Tuna! This is Thurston Wheelis.
And this is Arliss Struvy.
And this is the Wheelis
Struvy
Report.
And here we go with the news. Take it away, Thurston.
Well, folks, in the news today, we got the winner of the Tuna Junior High American Heritage Essay Contest for this year. And this year's winner is... Connie Karp!
Oh.
She's the daughter of W.H. and Vera Karp here in Tuna.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
The name of her essay is titled, Human Rights. Why bother?
Eh.
Second place went to Jimbo Beaumont for
Ooh.
Living with Radiation.
Ooh.
And third place went to LaVita Posey for her essay titled, The Other Side of Bigotry.
Hmm.
I tell you what, Arliss, with subjects like that, I don't know how they ever picked a winner.
I don't either. I tell you, it should make the citizens of Tuna proud to know that we're still producing well-educated students who know what America is all about.
The name of the play is Greater Tuna. The University Theater is producing it with opening night on July 11th and running through July 27th, and then it'll be back for 2 weeks in September. If you're there, you'll see two actors. Those two actors play all 22 residents of Tuna, Texas, billed as the third smallest town in Texas. I'm Norman Gilliland, and we'll find out how and why they're going to do it. This is University of the Year. With me is director Jim Stauffer, and the two actors playing those 22 parts, Kalen Fleck and Trevor Reese. Welcome to University of the Air.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
I can't wait to see what we get into here. Rumor has it we're actually going to be having conversations with some of those myriad characters. I have to say off the top, though, that it has real appeal to me as a radio person and somebody who has delved deeply into old radio shows were the tradition. There was a long tradition of having two people do all the parts. It ran from, Lubin Abner back in as early as the late 20s, right on through Bob and Ray in the 1960s and 70s. And so what has prompted you to turn to this format?
Probably, I'm just going to second guess the department for choosing this production, but there's a lot of different aspects in why we choose the productions we do. First, and I would say foremost, is financially, can we do it? Is the production too big or too small? What kind of budget do we have for that particular spot? Also, the performances we do are an extension of our classrooms, so does it have an academic value? Are we teaching our students something by doing this particular performance? And also, is it going to be something that's going to draw in an audience?
Well, yeah, you have to think about that, don't you?
Sure.
Well, there is a tradition or at least a history of University Theater doing some of these plays where two people are doing all the parts. I mean, musical of musicals, for example. And then there are other theatrical examples, too, where you will see just two people doing all the parts and both genders and mixing it all up. And it, I would have to think, be very demanding for two people. We'll get into the timing and all that later, but just to play 22 different characters, how long does it take to get that into your head, Kalen?
Oh, I don't know. When did we start? We started at the end of May, didn't we?
Yeah.
And it's only been recently that I've realized just what it is that I've gotten myself into when I look back over the script after a run-through during rehearsal and remind myself that I have actually memorized half of the script and Trevor has memorized the other half. But really what helps us out is, we started, from square one, just trying to figure out who each of these characters are. And there was a lot of playing at the beginning of the rehearsal process where it was, let's try this character this way, let's try that character another way, and let's see what it is that works. Let's explore until we find out who this character is.
I was telling them early on in the process that there's really no wrong way to do these characters. There's just more interesting ways than others. So I didn't want to impede any of their creativity. We got into this thing, And we didn't even start in a rehearsal studio. We went out to parks, sat by Lakeside, and just played with different characters vocally and physically, got them up on its feet. We were on the Monona Terrace.
Did you attract an interest?
We did.
Many people stopped by and looked at us with various looks.
Yeah.
So is this equitable, or is each of you doing 11 of the 22 characters?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're both doing the entire town of Tuna, essentially.
Population 22.
Yeah.
Take a couple of guys. Are there particular characters, and you're doing both genders, are there particular characters, despite that are harder for you to get into than others?
I actually find age difficult to perform truthfully. I find age very easy to kind of lampoon and make fun of.
With the broad gestures.
Yeah. But the challenge was, kind of going along with what Jim said, was along with trying to make these characters interesting, our goal is also to try and make these characters as real as they can be. You know, that one of the things that Jim said was he wanted us to have these characters to be so true to life that were we to perform a character by walking down State Street, that people would look at us and go, oh, that's just the way that person is, as opposed to that's clearly an actor doing something to get attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's the thing you want to do is within a lot of plays or theater is within the world of the play, this is their real world. So it's not just a bunch of actors playing these characters. This is their town. This is how they make their living, or this is how they talk to interact with people. So we want to keep that as truthful as possible throughout the process, even though they are quirky or have certain tics or things that make them act that way.
So you're after depth of character.
Yeah.
Three-dimensional beings.
And I would argue that that's what an audience is after as well.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That to walk out of a theater and be fully impacted by as truthful a performance as possible, mm-hmm. as opposed to walking out of a theater and going, well, that was a fun night.
Yeah. Be invested by the performance and also feel for different characters so that, you know, you want the audience to keep on talking about these people on the way home and how, you know, this person had this thing and that was interesting, or this person had this thing, or the relationships between each character inside this world that we've created as well. And that's the thing about theater is you always want to make an impact when people leave the seats and go home. So, yeah.
Is this the sort of play, then, that you would do a talk back after?
We are actually doing a talk back on Thursday, the 17th of July.
In which the audience can say, well, so what's with this? Or
you guys were fantastic.
Okay, everybody can go home now. Well, the distinction that you made, Kaylin, about this depth of character also reminds me of traditional radio drama, because if you compare two of the most famous comedies of the 30s and 40s, Jack Benny Program and the Fred Allen Show, I think they exemplify the difference between those two. And the difference between those two, I think, accounts for the longevity of the Jack Benny Program, which had rounded characters that they developed over the course of 10, 15, 20 years on the radio, versus Fred Allen, who always did these stock caricatures. Yeah, you know, mm-hmm. when he went down Allen's Alley. And, you know, today very few people have heard of, you know, Fred Allen unless they're old-time radio fanatics, whereas Jack Benny, you know, had continued life in television and all that. Really, it's an interesting way to distinguish which show or which character is going to have long life. And so what about you, Trevor? Any particular character of these 11 that you do that's a particular challenge to you?
The neat thing is, not necessarily a challenge, but every time that you do the character or different characters that over the rehearsal process, we always were able to find new things that enhanced the reality of this character. I think the real fun part, and it can be challenging in some ways, is the switching of characters as well.
Sure.
I mean, we're essentially running around in different directions on stage, changing into characters from one to the other, all the time. So finding that physical gesture this character might have and just switching right into it and then leaving that and going into another character and doing the different vocals with that stuff too. So it is challenging, but I think the key is it's fun too, because again, we're just playing and so it's challenging, but it's very rewarding and fun.
How do the playwrights, and there are three of them, they, by the way, there are Jason Williams, Joe Sears, and Ed Howard, how do they identify the characters? I mean, if you're flipping over that fast, you know, 22 times in the course of this play, how are we supposed to, as audience, to know who you are?
Well, we have a great costume designer, Jim Greco, and each one of these characters has a very definite look to them, as well as the actors are finding different vocalizations and physicalizations for the character. They're going to have a totally different look with wigs, costuming, fat suits, and these all have to be changed in a split second.
And does this split second change, these changes, are they going to take place before the audience's eyes, or is this a deal where you kind of like go backstage and you come right back out as somebody else?
Well, that is a choice that we could have made. We are doing these backstage, and we do have three costumers backstage, and it's choreographed just like a dance show would be choreographed. One costumer person might be taking off one wig and another one putting another one on as one comes off, and the other person is ripping a Velcro fat suit off while another person's getting the arm in of the next. It's demanding, and those backstage people have to know the show just as well as these guys do.
So these are specialized costumes. They're kind of like tearaway costumes.
Every single one of them, yep. And we're talking about mustaches, glasses, canes,
sure.
Purses.
Full suits.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so back to the identification of the characters, though, just the sheer names, how is the audience going to keep track? Do you give them a scorecard?
Those will be passed out at the beginning.
For a $1
fee. Yeah. A lot of the characters throughout, in some way, names are thrown around so they identify themselves, or other characters will reference them throughout the evening, throughout the play. So that's really – name identification is put out there, so it's very understandable to the audience. So that attached with the costumes and the different vocals and the different gestures and body positions will make it really easy for people to see who is what and when and what time. So – it helps for us too. So,
is there music to help any of this along?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We have a sound designer in our assistant director, Chelsea Anderson, who has done a really, really great job coming up with a number of different folksy, bluegrassy. I think we have some Elvis thrown in there somewhere. Some Hank Williams.
And they fit. They definitely fit like a character or a particular scene, themes throughout the play.
Mm-hmm. We also have some jingles like the radio station OKKK, OKKK.
Yep.
has its own jingle that she wrote and recorded. Dee Dee's Guns and Ammo has its own jingle.
Jingle.
And that also helps the actors a little bit. Gives them just another 5 seconds to
get into character.
Change costumes.
Oh, just purely the change part, let alone getting into character. And so what's the premise of the play? What's the background of it, Jim?
Well, the three authors that you mentioned, Jason Williams, Joe Sear, and Ed Howard, wrote some skits back in Austin, Texas, back in the early 80s, political skits, satire that they would just perform at parties. And that's what turned into Greater Tuna.
Okay. Let me just digress here just for a second. Okay. Why is that then? Is it Tuna, Texas?
It's Tuna, yeah.
Tuna, because this includes all 22 of the people who live in the suburbs.
Yeah. Yes. And two of the authors, Jason Williams and Joe Sears, they were the two actors in the performance, and Howard was the director. And since then, they've gone on to write three other productions, Tuna, Red, White, and Blue, Tuna Christmas. Las Vegas Tuna, I believe.
Yeah. Detect a subtle theme there connecting those plays.
Yes. And at one time, Greater Tuna was the most produced play in America.
No kidding. And when did it come out then?
Came out in, I believe, 1981, and it was produced off-Broadway in 82.
Well, I have to admit, it's a new one to me. I must have been under the wrong rock all this time. But it has advantages, I suppose, for a lot of high schools, assuming that they can handle it, but certainly colleges because, sort of like our town, and it's pretty simple sets and limited number of characters.
It can be. Once again, those are all choices. My research on the show, there's been community theater productions where a different actor plays each one of the characters, which
really?
I think would take away from a lot of the humor of it. But I'm guessing a community theater had a lot of actors that they want to employ. And there's been productions where it's just a table and two chairs and a trunk of clothes and wigs, and the actors change right in front of the audience. We have a wonderful set designer, Seth, and lighting designer, Glenn, who have created a beautiful set. And we basically wanted to create the town of Tuna. So once you walk into the space, there's party lights hanging over the audience, and it's like you just walked into Tuna, Texas, and you're going to spend the next 2 hours in Tuna.
Well, speaking of Greater Tuna, of course, that would include the audience out there beyond the suburbs, I suppose. And you're going to do this as a cabaret style. What was your decision to do that? Where did that come from?
Well, the cabaret style is just it's fun for us to do because we can serve pop and popcorn, and people just can kind of come in for the summer and sit back and enjoy a nice comedy and kind of forget their troubles for a little while and have fun. Usually our summer productions, if we do it in the Hemsley Theater, we'll do it in a cabaret style. If they're a small musical or a comedy such as this.
Has any of you had experience with this play before?
No.
No.
Mm-mm.
No. When I was a graduate student here back in the early 90s, I did two shows for two men. One was Mystery of Irma Vep. Each one of us played around seven different characters. So it was a lot of quick changes. Once again, Jim Greco designed that. And one of my dresses was a wool dress, and I remember they couldn't wash that. And
one of your dresses, okay.
It was, okay. but I remember a lot of Febreze being used during that performance.
Well, so it's going to be interesting, I'm guessing, to see from night to night how the audiences react.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's always, it seems to me, a difference as to which lines get the laughs mm-hmm. and how the audience responds to the whole thing.
Yep, and that's going to be – that's a lot of fun about being a performer and an actor, and particularly in a show like this, is that it keeps us on our toes all the time, so that way you don't get too comfortable. You just – it's spontaneous, and again, it's if we're having fun, they're having fun. If they're having fun, we're having fun.
Mm-hmm. Especially with a show like this.
Yeah.
And we are definitely at this point in the process just itching for an audience. Mm-hmm. We've gotten to the point where we need to start fine-tuning all the little bits. And as wonderful as it is that we are at that point, it's also rather frustrating because we're still so far out of having that audience that mm-hmm. we really, really want.
Well, and of course, I mean, you've been through these laugh lines, 100 times by now, and so you don't really know if the audience is going to laugh at them or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the trick because the audience right now is the assistant stage manager, myself and the assistant director, the four of us. And we've seen the show many, many times, and we're not laughing much anymore. And even where we did laugh, that might not be where an audience laughs.
Right.
So they're really going to have to be on their toes. An interesting thing about comedy is if you don't let the audience laugh at the very beginning, they will stop laughing because they want to hear the lines, if that makes sense.
Well, if I get what you're saying, Jim, you have to know how to let those lines breathe a little, let the audience laugh before the next line comes in.
Correct. And if you just barrel over the laughter, what you're doing is you're training your audience that we're not stopping for you.
Yeah.
And we're just going to continue no matter what. And they'll stop laughing then.
So sure.
It's a fine – you don't want to pause if they're not going to laugh, but you need to pause if they do. And that means if you cut yourself off mid-sentence, let them laugh, and then start the sentence again.
Sure.
That's a convention that we do as actors.
Mm-hmm. But the first part of that I thought was quite interesting, too. If they're not laughing, keep right on going,
Yep.
Just keep going.
On to the next one.
Well, that's got to be an old, even for stand-up comics. I'm sure that's a principle that's been used many times.
Yeah.
I think we're going to meet some of these characters right here in our studio, some of these 22 characters that you'll find in Greater Tuna right after this. This is University of the Air. Thank you. I'm Norman Gilliland, back with, I think I'll call all three of you characters of one kind or another, all of them involved with the play Greater Tuna, which the University Theater in Madison at UW is producing. Opening night being July 11th. The show will run through July 27th, and this is a little different. It'll be back for 2 weeks in September. I think the 19th is the first of the dates for that second run. And the story is all about these 22 residents of Tuna, Texas, the third smallest town in Texas. I can't wait for the sequel about the second smallest town in Texas. I'm Norman Gilliland, and with me are Jim Stauffer, who's the director of the show, and then we have two actors playing all 22 parts, Kalen Fleck and Trevor Rees. Well, okay, as long as we're talking about 22 parts in this play, and each of you get 11, I'm guessing that the only thing that you haven't memorized here is actually the list of characters. You seem to have the rest of it down. So rattle them off here. Kalen, what are your 11?
Well, I play Thurston Wheelis, Elmer Watkins, Bertha Buemiller, Yippy the Dog, Leonard Childers, Pearl Burris, R.R. Snavely, Reverend Spikes, Sheriff Givens, and Bertha's husband, Hank.
Okay, and you, Trevor?
And the other 11 residents are Arliss Struvey, I play Dee Dee Snavely, Harold Dean Latimer, Petey Fisk, Jody Buemiller, Stanley Buemiller, Charlene Buemiller, Chad Hartford, Finus Bly, and Vera Karp.
So you're obviously not talking to yourselves. You're talking to each other in this various configuration of characters. But you're playing, what, a whole family there?
Oh, yeah. Trevor? I'm playing all the kids.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Trevor is playing all of my kids that I had together, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Okay. And the premise is that this whole scene, this whole storyline in Greater Tuna, Texas is somehow tied together through radio?
Yeah. I've been telling my friends that it is something like the Texas version of A Prairie Home Companion, and that all of these characters listen to this radio show. They are all connected through this radio show, that Thurston and Arliss are kind of like the more conservative, less wistful, and much more fun-loving Garrison Keillor. and that the two of us are like Garrison and his two actors playing all these different characters in this one town.
Okay, so is that radio station OKKK, and they're both DJs on it? Is that the idea?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. And so they're having one of those two-man shows in which they have the repartee going back and forth. But are they sort of knowingly playing the characters, or these are characters that actually come into the show somehow?
I would say the latter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They definitely are not knowingly going backstage to change into a character. When we go off stage, we come back as that character.
Is there any challenge at all in remembering which character you're going to be when you go backstage?
Well, I would say the first few weeks of rehearsal, you start thinking about, oh, I come here, is that? Oh, this? Nope, that. But the more you do it and the more you get comfortable with it, and it just gets easier and easier, and then you essentially, your body will just take you there, and the whatever character you are will take you to whatever you're supposed to be at that point. So.
And you've got the costume, I suppose, as a reminder, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we have been told that some of these characters are going to put in an appearance here, and so I think as long as they're here, we've dimmed the lights to get the, you know, kind of right environment for this sort of theatrical thing. And so our first one visiting us for University of the Air here is, now let me know, dear, if I get your name wrong, is it Bertha Buemiller?
Buemiller, yes.
Okay, and so you are the wife of Hank and the mother of Judy, Stanley, and Charlene.
That's Jody, my youngest son, yes.
Yeah, I told you it was dark in here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you are a card-carrying member of the, okay, this is what it says, Smut Snatchers of the New Order.
Yes, the Smut Snatchers of the New Order.
And what is the purpose of this organization?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Norman, because we are dedicated to providing
safety and providing security for our young children that go to Tuna High School. Now, my job as the head of the subcommittee is to snatch the books off the shelves of the high school library that we feel are inappropriate for our young children's eyes.
And is this something you get to do on your own, or do you have to collaborate with your fellow smut snatchers?
Oh, I collaborate.
Uh-huh. And so what kind of books would fall into that category?
Well, I don't know if any of our audience would be familiar with any of the books that I would be saying, but I do believe that there are some books in this day and age that are probably very inappropriate for our children to read. I believe there are so many books about vampires and wizards and just some horrible, the undead. Now, our children should not be reading about those things.
No vampires in Greater Tuna for you.
No. Mm-hmm. No vampires. No undead either. We bury our dead.
Now, well, good idea. It's a good start anyway. Well, so how many of you are there in this organization and how did it all get started?
Well, I don't really quite know the origin story. You'd have to ask the Reverend Spikes about that.
The origin story. Yeah, well, that's not the origin story I was thinking of. That would be way too controversial.
Yes, of course. But perhaps you could ask Vera Karp. She knows all about that kind of stuff. I just joined because I have a concern for the children. I have a concern for my children looking at those books.
Well, okay. Vera Karp has joined us. And what's your part?
Oh, hello, Vera.
Oh, hi. Vera Karp, just like Norman said.
Yes, welcome to the University of the Air.
And, That's a cute shirt you have on.
Well, thank you very
much. You're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Well.
Later I'll tell you where I got it. And it wasn't in Greater Tuna, though. I mean, the sartorial opportunities in that particular town, I've noticed, are quite limited.
Yep, some towns have men's warehouses. We just have a warehouse.
I had to go all the way to Flatonia, Texas, for this particular garment. So tell me what your part, Vera, is in this smut-snatching organization.
Well, I am vice president of the Smut Snatchers of the New Order. And as Bertha said before, Reverend Spikes is the president. And what I do is I go to the Tuna High School libraries and I check the dictionaries and remove those horrible words.
Yeah. See, Vera removes the words from the dictionaries and I remove the books from the shelves.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that has a certain thoroughness to it. And just how do you remove these words?
Well, we were originally going to take the dictionaries and just cross them out, but there's about 7,000 of those. So what we did is we're just going to, you know, remove them the best we can. I have a list of the words if you want to hear them.
Well, I was going to say, you know, this is public radio, but, you know, let's take a chance for the sake of, you know, edification.
All right.
So what are these words?
Now, be careful, Vera.
I will, Bertha.
Some people may not want to hear these words.
Well,
okay, we'll just have a little beep at the beginning of this, you know, and that if we have to, like, take something out, then you'll know.
They are just horrible.
Beep.
All right. The words are hot.
Hot? Should I ask what's wrong with hot?
Please don't repeat that word. It's so bad.
Isn't it hot in Texas?
Oh, but that's such a naughty word. It's always hot in Texas. The next one is hooker.
Okay, I see where you're going.
Mm-hmm. Coke?
Well, wait a minute. What's wrong with that?
People may think it's a delicious little treat, but it also means something else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The next one is clap. And I'm not talking about putting your hands together either.
Like for a great comedy, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
No, not that kind. Okay, yeah. Social misfunction there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The next one is, I can't even say it, deflower.
Oh, Vera!
Wait, it's in here. It's a list of words.
Is that a word that comes up often in conversation in Greater Tuna, though? I mean, is it really that big a threat? It's working kind
we
of hard
We want to prevent it before it stops.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
We're
before
stopping
it gets
it.
Bigger. Stop yep. it before it gets before all it
that,
spreads.
All that deflowering needs to end.
Correct.
Okay, well, that sounds like a recipe for, success of some kind there. Anything else there? I wasn't counting.
We have three more, and I don't know if I can say them, but I think I will. Ball. Mm.
Okay, that's a very singular word. What else?
Knocker.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Well, if you don't have a doorbell, you have to use something.
Well, I suppose, but you better use the doorbell.
We're going to outlaw all those knockers.
Well, good luck with that, I guess. What else do you have?
And the last one is... Oh, here we go.
Be strong, Vera.
I'm trying. Here, hold my hand.
Okay.
Not that tight, Bertha.
Sorry.
Nuts.
Nuts. Well, you know, that's how you know, you're going to leave that out of a lot of recipes, you know, that people enjoy.
It's a recipe for disaster. That's all I got to say. Ha-ha!
Okay. Well, how far are you in this quest to stamp out these? I mean, how many dictionaries have you crossed out?
Well... We're at about 7 right now. That's we only have 8 dictionaries in Tuna, so we're finding the last one.
Well, that's one advantage of a small town. Don't you, though, have to kind of keep out those tawdry outside influences? What about out-of-towners?
Out-of-towners.
Like bringing in books and words.
They are welcome.
No vampires, though.
No vampires.
No.
Or undead.
No, none of that stuff. Okay. Well, I guess I wish you luck with that, too. And how long have you been at it, by the way?
Oh, I don't know.
I would probably say. Let's see here.
Well, I feel like I've been doing it my whole life.
That's what it feels like.
Mm-hmm.
I dare
so
say.
So probably about 2 weeks.
Okay. So it's a little early to know how successful you're going to be with this.
It is the smut snatchers of the new order. The old order, we won't talk about them.
Yeah, it was old and it didn't work.
No. So the new order has been much more successful.
So far. Well, 2 weeks? Well, you know, that's something. That's a start anyway, as I said.
Yes, we must start somewhere, Norman.
Well begun is half done. Now, is there room to bring in Petey Fisk? Petey Fisk also...
Oh, I better leave. Yeah, well, I have words for Petey Fisk that should not be said over the radio.
Well, this is all about not saying words over the radio, so I think that's probably true.
I suppose I'll leave, too. Goodbye, Bertha. Nice
talking
to you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Good to see you both, Bertha and Vera.
Thank you, Norman.
I think probably hearing about your efforts further, if not on public radio and some other, well, on OKKK.
Exactly. Thank you.
Of course.
Thank you.
Until next time.
Come on, Virgil. Get in the car.
Petey Fisk, as Petey is an employee of the Greater Tuna Humane Society.
That's correct.
That sounds like Petey now.
This is Petey Fisk speaking to you for the Greater Tuna Humane Society.
And devoted to improving the lives of all the animals around him. What kind of animals do you have around you, Petey, in Greater Tuna?
Well, we have plenty of animals in Greater Tuna, and particularly in the Humane Society. Now, we have ducks.
You have what?
We have ducks. You know those little billed birds.
Could you spell that?
That would be D-U-C-K-S. Ducks.
I never knew that it was a two-syllable word.
What does that mean, Norman?
Well, let's just go on to the next animal.
Oh, okay. The other animals we have at the Humane Society are snakes.
Snakes, okay.
We have plenty of snakes. We have plenty of animals.
But you think the snakes should be humanely handled?
Well, of course.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They have to be. Just because they're slithery and stuff doesn't mean that they're not beautiful creatures.
That's right. They're in
just
the Bible.
Just like the ducks.
Yeah. Now, what about the animules, did you say?
Oh, they're called... Well, animals.
Animals.
That's what we take in at the Humane Society.
Well, that's the whole collective thing. So yeah. I'll call them ducks because I don't think I can master the exact dialect.
That's such a weird way to
ducks
say that,
and
Norman.
Snakes are all part of the animules.
Animals.
Animals.
Mules are something different, and we don't have those in Tuna.
Not anymore, I imagine.
Yeah.
So what other animals do you have?
Well, we also have dogs.
Dogs.
Okay. And cats.
And cats. Yes.
Oh, I was just going to say, I have a dog that would be a great pet for someone out there. So if there's anybody out there who wants a dog, we have one here by the name of Yippee.
Yippee.
And he's a part rat terrier, part chihuahua, and he will make a lovely pet for someone. So if you're out there and you want a dog, Yippee is your choice.
All right. Now I have to... I have to wonder, is Yippee one of the 22 residents? Is he counted as one of the 22 residents of Greater Tuna, Texas?
Maybe. He's a resident of the Humane Society at the moment, and I just want to get rid of this beautiful little creature.
So are you going to advertise on OKKK Radio?
Oh, we're advertising all the time on radio station OKKK, and no one seems to want Yippie just yet. But we'll be sure to find a way to get rid of, get a new home for Yippie.
Does he have to...
quiet down, please.
Yippie?
Excuse me, Norman. Stop it, Yippie, right now. Right now.
Does he have deportment issues?
He has a lot of issues. Oh, you stop wagging your tail right now. Now, Yippie, you stop wagging your...
I don't think we're going to find a taker this afternoon either.
Here, I'm going to put Yippie outside. 1 second.
I think I just heard the screen door close.
Yep.
Wow. Okay.
So what else you got, Norman, for the Humane Society? What do you think?
What else should the Humane Society, what do they typically have? Well, ferrets and weasels and stuff like that. I mean, there's so many different kinds of pets these days.
Well, we care about all the animals of the world. We care about whales.
Whales, but you don't have any of those.
Doesn't mean we can't take care of them. I send a $50 check to the Whale Society of America.
Well, that.
Every month.
That is a whale of a contribution.
But I have to post-date it.
How far?
Probably 2 weeks in advance.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say 50 years or something, just to play it safe.
Oh, well, that was the last check, but we also do whales. We also do, we did mules.
Well, yeah, but that was that was a long time
ago. That was a long time ago. We're also into the white sharks.
Also very, altruistic of you, since you probably don't have a lot of them, although Greater Tuna would sound like it might have some sharks around it. Come to think. Now, where does his name come from, Greater Tuna? Can you tell me that, as long as we're talking animals?
Well, my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, Payday Fisk, he was one of the founders, I believe, of Tuna. But it's really a collective. Everybody has really grown up in the town of Tuna, so the origins aren't really...
Lost.
They're
history.
Lost. They're lost. They were history. In the dictionaries, but
they got scratched out accidentally.
Yeah. So.
Well, it sounds like a fascinating place to visit.
It is. So if you come on down, we have a. You can pet an animal, and this week's animal for petting is ants.
Ants. Well,
plenty
they
of
need,
ants.
They need love too. I'm
yes.
sure.
Mm-hmm. And those are up for adoption as well.
You get them like by the handful or what? A can load of them?
By the barrel.
By the barrel. Barrel of ants.
Barrel of ants. It's like a barrel of monkeys, but full of ants.
And the Humane Society there at Greater Tuna.
Yes. Okay. You got it correct, Norman. Thank you.
All right. Well, we'll listen for further information on the radio there at OKKK as to what various animals need love there at the Humane Society.
Thank you.
On that note, we're going to be back shortly. This is University of the Air. I'm Norman Gilliland. This is University of the Air in a slightly different format here. We're hearing from cast members and director of the play Greater Tuna, which the University Theater is producing, with opening night being July 11th. It's running through July 27th, and it will be back for 2 weeks in September, starting on September 19th. And with me are the director of the play, Jim Stauffer, and the two actors playing all 22 parts in the play. They are Kaelin Fleck and Trevor Reese. And we have just gotten a good dose of those characters, although that was all, as you might have gathered, improv based on just getting into character. You know, it's an interesting phenomenon, this whole idea of the character having an existence outside the play or outside the novel. And I think it's a hallmark of a well-rounded character, or let's say at least a fun character, that you can do that you can extend, you can extemporize on that character based on what's on the printed page. So let's go through those four that we just met and see what it took for you to kind of get into the character ad-libbing like that, starting with Bertha.
Well, Jim and I had a number of conversations, and actually, in many ways, Bertha was kind of born in the audition process when I auditioned. After reading the side that was available to me that I was auditioning with for Bertha, I got the impression that this was a woman who needed to have a voice that carried. Because
that's good for theater.
Yeah, well, good for theater and good for raising three very rambunctious children who cause her no end of grief, as she says in the play. So I kind of decided that this woman was large in voice, was large in body, was large in personality. And I drew from many, many different sources to try and come
flesh
up with this
out,
character.
You might say.
Flesh her out. Yeah, that's a really good way of putting it, to kind of flesh this character out. You know, the women that I've seen portrayed in television, in movies, in plays, that I've read in books, women that I've met in my own life that I feel are large in voice, in personality, in body, all three of them together. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's where Bertha was born.
If you could visualize Kaylin in this role, Kaylin is, what, 6 foot?
4.
6 foot four.
Yeah, so he's straight up and down.
He's wearing a very tall wig, a leopard print pantsuit, and
is
heels.
Is there any, like, padding involved in these costumes?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Padding. Yeah. She's got some hips.
Yeah. She because of my height and the wig, the beehive wig, Bertha is the largest character in Tuna.
Yes. I wanted to digress just shortly before we get to those other three characters that we just met and ask you, Jim, about how you audition for people to play 11 parts.
The main thing that I was looking for in the audition process was, could these actors play? And if they auditioned with a certain character, I would say, try something different. And then they would try something different, and I would say, that was good, do something different. And you have to be a versatile actor in order to do this many different characters, and both of these guys brought that to the table immediately. They were able to instantly take on a different persona whenever I just snap my fingers.
Kind of scary, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also a sign of some talent, too. So.
The two are so often indistinguishable, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Well, then let's get over to Vera and find out from Trevor how you pulled that off.
Well, Vera is a very interesting character. I love Vera. Absolutely adore her. She is obviously like this church lady. And she finds a way to compliment you, but it's also slightly snotty and condescending and trying to one-up you in the same in the same vein. She's very involved in the Tuna area. She comes from a family with, you know, she's living comfortably and stuff like that. And she always wants to be the heads of different organizations and stuff, so in competition with others. So it was a lot of fun creating her because she has that very Southern Belle sing-songy quality where they can say things to you and you might be like, oh, well, that was a compliment. But really she's like, that is definitely not the right dress to be wearing today or something like that. So that's been a lot of fun for me because I also get to interact with the audience as well.
Oh, do you? No, I was going to ask about that because, again, it's cabaret style, which makes it even easier, I would think, for you to kind of circulate a little. Does that happen?
Oh, yeah. There's moments throughout the play that we come through the audience, and there's moments within the play where there might be some takes here and there. But, there's opportunities for both of us throughout the show to interact with the audience, to talk with them a little bit, to have fun, to make it a really full-out, immersive theatrical experience.
Is there at the beginning of most plays, it'll tell you the setting. It'll tell you where it happens and when it happens. What does it say for that for this play?
Well, I have my script in front of me.
And so far, it doesn't say anything.
Not really. I mean, there are notes about it taking place in Tuna. There are a lot of indications that this play is certainly set in a specific time. So I believe the 70s, 80s, somewhere in there.
Yeah, the some of the things that we heard at the very beginning, when the two DJs were talking about the prizes, you know, for the other side of, you know, and why bother?
Bigotry.
Yes.
Living with radiation.
And the human rights, why bother? Mm-hmm. You know, that, mm-hmm. that has a kind of a 60s, late 60s, 70s ring to it.
Mm-hmm.
But it still, of course, resonates today.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, let's get to those other two characters that we talked to. Did we talk to the sheriff? I don't think we got to him. We may have to.
No, he was taking care of a delinquent. He couldn't make it.
They have those in Greater Tuna, huh?
only four of them, as I'm told. Only four of them this year. Last year they had six, but now it's only four.
Yep, crime rate is down.
Yep. Down 50%. That's good.
Sheriff's done a nice job.
Mm-hmm. Or would it be 33 1/3%? Anyway, so what about Petey Fisk, Trevor?
Well, Petey Fisk, another character I just love. I loved all the characters, but Petey Fisk is very interesting. He has a very real quality. I mean, all the characters do, but how much he cares for the animals, for the animals in town. He really does have a likability, which Jim and I quite often talked about, that he does have a speech impediment and stuff, and that, you know, makes the character and makes him different. But he really does love these animals, and he does have this back and forth with Yippee, the dog that we were talking about. And but he's just a very likable character, and he really cares about this town and stuff. And
Yippee was probably the easiest character to flesh out.
I was going to ask, does Yippee have a costume that you have to get into?
No.
So that's only 21 changes.
No, I just imagine my sister's Yorkie, and that's Yippee for me.
Well, you know, that's another radio tradition, too. I mean, really, all the way, I would say, into the late 40s, if not the early 50s, for the animals, dogs in particular, cats also, to be played by a person. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were specialists who would actually make these sounds. Some of them were quite good. Some of them, you know, not so good. And then I think as you got into the transcribed dramas a little later, then they used real horses. I guess people even could make a few horse noises. But that's a radio tradition to do all the animals. There actually is a play about ants, but they don't make much noise. Leiningen versus the Ants is one of the famous episodes of Escape. So have the two of you, Trevor and Kaylin, played female parts before?
No, this is my first. I'm actually really excited about saying this. But no, this is the first time that I'm playing female characters, and the first time that I've cross-dressed for a role. So
we won't ask about other occasions
yeah.
for it, but
yeah.
for
yeah.
a role, this is the first time.
Yeah, I would say this isn't my first time wearing women's clothes. I did a show in my undergrad that we had heels and all that stuff. But this is actually, my first time actually playing female roles, actually vocally and physically and stuff like that, in that sense. And it's been quite fun. It's been a hoot. It's been a real hoot.
So as you go through these rehearsals, what kind of evolution do you feel of the characters or of the play, for that matter? I'm assuming that it's a straight comedy, that there aren't too many dark corners in this trajectory of characters in Greater Tuna, or am
there,
I wrong?
There are a couple. There are a couple. You'll just have to come and see the show to see them.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when I know that I've made a leap is when I do something that I hadn't planned. I do something completely instinctual, and that it's come out of whatever I was doing before. So I kind of find myself in the zone of working with mm-hmm. a character. Really, from the very beginning of the rehearsal, when we start at the top of the show, I have a pretty good feeling whether this rehearsal is going to be one of those rehearsals or not. And I'm usually able to know if, from the very beginning, I'm having fun doing what it is that I'm doing. Then I'm completely open to whatever it is that's going to happen, and that's usually when evolution happens with a character. Otherwise, I get right in my head and start becoming very self-aware of what it is that I'm doing. And
that's what it's all about, isn't it? Is not being self-aware and
mm-hmm.
just letting go.
Mm-hmm.
Is it at all tempting with a play like this to do a little ad-libbing, or is that so taboo that it would not even enter your head?
I don't know, Trevor. I think you should answer that question.
Oh, well.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. the really fun thing is agreeing with Caitlin that we're able to play and you know, create all these nuances and things. And when it comes to ad-libbing, we do have some liberties within the play to have some that are, again, within context of the entire world that we've created and that the playwrights have created as well. But there are quite a few times in rehearsals where we keep each other on each other's toes. So we we will ad-lib something and then it takes us off guard. So we have to be prepared for that. And actually, Jim, you know, promotes that in some instances so that way it doesn't get too comfortable in the sense of like we're able to continue to grow as characters and stuff. So yeah, there's quite a few times where in particular scenes like with Vera and a few other places where I might throw in something that might make you crack up a little bit.
Yeah,
he does the same thing with me as well.
I come from a tradition of being very married to the script. And working with Trevor has made me grow as an actor because he does keep me on my toes. And I'm not particularly familiar with what his background is, but he comes in and he's ready to go and do whatever. And
yeah, you know, that's an interesting distinction, too, because getting back into the old-time radio, we were talking, a colleague and I, the other day about the difference between Jack Benny and Groucho Marx, and they did appear together occasionally, very different as their styles were, and they also had different approaches because Jack Benny was by the script, Groucho Marx was not, and it was kind of like, you know, cheek to jowl there in terms of getting them to work together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we don't have that.
No, not at all.
No,
not at all.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But yeah, we stay very true to the script, and we're obviously saying all the lines that are written because it's such a great piece. But there are moments where we crack each other up with like a new nuance that appears.
Trevor more so than me.
Well, thanks for coming in today, all however many of you it would be, six, I guess, for one manner of speaking, the various voices that we've been speaking here. The actors with me today have been Caitlin Fleck and Trevor Reese. The director of the show is Jim Stauffer, and the show is Greater Tuna. The University Theater is producing it July 11th through the 27th and again in September, and you can find out more about it, tickets and all that stuff, if you go to this website, which is theater, that's theater with an R-E, theater at wisc.edu. I'm Norman Gilliland, and I hope you'll join me next time around for University of the Air.